Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Kaya Biz.
Market update.
Ooh, it sounds so serious. But then again it is, because we're talking about money here, long-term money. And our money right now, it's looking fairly long, as the colloquial term goes in the US, when you have deep pockets and a lot of money. But the All-Share Index in negative territory by just over a third of a percent. It's just shy of 300 points, actually. 85,102 points is where we are trading today. A lot of that pullback from the financial services stocks, and we'll give you some details as to where and why. Let's take a look at some of those major moves. As that does come up on screen here, what we do see in terms of the major moves is that it's been largely dominated by many of the resource stocks. But today, major moves, some of the losers continues to be the coal and platinum counters, Anglo Platinum, Exxaro Resources, weaker by both just over 2.5%. We Buy Cars pulling back by 2%, including the likes of Vodacom and Telkom, weaker by 2 and 3% there. Some household names that are dominating and have been seeing a lot of movement there has to be Pick and Pay. That share price up by 3.5%. Now, we would know why. Tomorrow at 9 a.m., Boxer will officially be unbundled from the Pick and Pay stable and essentially listing on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. So a lot of activity and excitement around that particular valuation and the listing that will take place tomorrow. A few other companies that are performing a lot better happen to be those in the property space: PH Prop, High Prop, and Sirius Group, all up between 1 and 6%. Let's talk about what we see in terms of the currency now. The dollar-rand exchange rate, I don't know what's been happening over the last 24 hours, but clearly there's one word, Trump. Not only on the back of the ongoing concerns regarding the tariffs that he wants to implement, but we do see that the U.S. Federal Reserve also highlighting a change in terms of their gauge on inflation and some of the expectations that are taking place there. Bear in mind, the U.S. is also preparing for Thanksgiving holidays, so it will be interesting to see how the markets do continue to perform before that public holiday does take place there. But let's talk about the rand. We are now at 18.20 to the US dollar. Someone actually sent a tweet, I must tell you, to Seize the World earlier this week and said, the rand was much better when I wasn't here. So maybe I need to head back to the US. Trust me, I didn't pick up the rand at all. It's just part of the market dynamics. In terms of the currency to the British pound, we're 23.06 and 19.23 against the euro. Let's get some analysis now and lots of insight that will prove to be fruitful to us as investors. For that, we're joined by the CEO of Shiloh Capital, Thamsanqa Netta. Such a pleasure to have you, saying welcome to the show.
Thank you, thank you. Happy hump day.
Happy hump day, definitely. But is it a happy one?
Yeah, look, you take the crookeds with the straights. So yeah. we'll take that. We're coming to the festive season with everything that comes along with that.
That's very true. Let's get into the detail though, Thamsanqa, and maybe just reflecting on the global market dynamics. I mentioned one word, Trump. And that's because for many of us and many of market professionals like yourself, he really is the Trump card. And, you know, really uncertain as to how to call things, because there's just this heightened level of anxiety in the markets. It shouldn't be taking place, really, because ultimately we need to see what he will do once he is officially inaugurated as president. But there's a lot of noise out there in the markets right now.
Yeah, look, I think firstly, America is a deeply divided country around this issue. So there's a lot of people who feel that because he won, America is not going to do well, or the lives of the average Americans are not going to be great. And that sort of seeps into how the market treats and how people buy or sell, how people economically participate. However, the reality is he's going to set about a set of policies which lead to what we'd call protectionism. Mm-hmm. He's going to make sure that the American economy is protected. He's going to look towards domesticizing the energy. And he's been very clear about making government more efficient, as you can see with Elon Musk. So I think the focus is we have to get our house in order, especially the debt side of things. When you have that many trillions outstanding, it's concerning. I think they had 103 debt to GDP ratio. So it's a concern for them. And they want to get rid of that kind of concern. So they're looking and saying, okay, how do we get our house in order? Which is always going to cause some kind of turmoil because, in essence, someone's going to take some pain somewhere.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Donald is as mad or as crazy as people say.
Yeah.
I think the proof will be in the pudding. He doesn't have the 8 years he prospectively thought he had initially.
Yeah.
So he's got 3 years or so to get it right. And set up for the next Republican who will compete. So he doesn't have a lot of wiggle room in terms of policy. So he'll have to make some very strong and hard decisions that will result in a better America.
Got you. You've got me excited now because there's so much to talk about when it comes to the U.S. economy. But one thing it certainly has been, despite its debt burden, is resilient. If we look at the jobs numbers, if we take a look at what we see in terms of GDP growth, I do see growing at 2.8% there. So certainly a significant pace. And yes, there's some concerns around inflation and the property and housing market. But ultimately, it almost seems as though the cycle and the tide is working in Donald Trump's favor.
Yeah, rising tide lifts all ships, right?
Right.
So we've got to look at it more pragmatically and say that America is a different country to a lot of other countries. One, they've got a lot of people in the middle class. So you've got 400 million people and a large percentage of them are in the middle class. Secondly, they don't sell products just to America. They sell products to the world.
Mm-hmm.
Thirdly, they're reserve currency. So that also helps them a bit. So when they print dollars, we all consume them and we all demand them. Whereas if we print rands, we've got a different scenario. Mm-hmm. So I think they have a unique advantage and can use that advantage to their benefit. Now, will they actually use it to make sure that the country comes right for the long term, medium to long term? That's a different discussion. They've got a lot of infrastructure to fix. They've got a lot of issues to deal with, the social and economic divides that exist, the race issues, the demographics that are changing. A lot of Latin Americans are now coming in there. So it's going to change how people vote, how people feel, and what's going to go forward. The debates around freedom of speech, the debates around Roe v. Wade.
Yes.
So there's a lot of dynamics that are happening internally that they have to get a handle on. It's a very, very democratic country, and they have to sort of figure out where they're going and will they back the man who America has voted to be in charge, and that's where the reality of everything will come to pass.
Gosh, we can have this conversation for hours on end, as we were doing outside the studio, because it's such a dynamic environment, but one that also plays an influence on our day-to-day lives. And maybe let's talk about that when it comes to the currency crosses as well. 1820, I'm not too sure what's led to that particular shock. Is this still part of the tariff
debate? So there's a few things about the rand we need to have a discussion about. The first thing is the rand is the most liquid emerging market currency.
Yes.
So when the globe has an issue with Brazil, China, India, Russia, we take the brunt of that because there'll be a sell of the rand. So there's a significant portion of the pricing of the rand that's really outside of our control. So global markets, when they look at currency exposure, and they look at emerging market exposure, they look at the rand as the primary currency to go to.
Mm-hmm.
So we have that issue. Something could happen in another part of the world that has a negative view on that part of the world, or call it the global south in general, and we take the brunt for that.
Yeah.
The second thing is the inflation differentials and the interest rate differentials do a lot in terms of impacting the rand. So if the U.S. has a lower inflation rate than us, the rand will take some beating. If we have significant, call it interest rate differentials, where people feel like buying South African assets is going to pay them a higher interest or higher rate of return in comparison to US assets or other global assets, we get a lot of inflows and that impacts the rand. So there's a lot that happens that's really outside of domestic issues. So you have to weed that out. And then after you've weeded that out, you look and say, South Africa has have a trade surplus. You look at the commodity exports that are growing. So you can say, okay, so there's a lot of incoming forex in comparison. So the rand will always have this sort of to and fro, a tug of war that's largely outside of the ministers, Enoch Onungwane, and the Reserve Bank governor's control.
Yeah, very true. I'm glad that you've contextualized it as a beautiful reminder for many of us who might have forgotten that very liquid, very fluid. That's exactly what the rand typically is. What I'm intrigued by, Tam Sangla, is that you're a private equity guy. But here we are talking about the global markets and listed equity space. But maybe if you can indulge us very briefly, the private equity space is I think, been seeing an interesting time. Many have been rather critical about just the lack of deal flow and activity that we see specifically in the domestic market, never mind what we see across the continent. But contextualize it for us.
So there's a couple of things to think about. A large percentage of economy is private, of any economy is private, right?
Sure.
So there's a lot of activity that happens at multiple tiers of the economy. However, there's a couple of things. Private equity is framed around the quality of a business. So a lot of the time what you will see is, especially in, call it emerging market businesses, the family that runs the business more often than not does not necessarily run it in a manner that is ready to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Then secondly, there's the group of businesses which are cyclical, don't do well at a particular point in time, so no one wants to buy a revenue declining asset.
Mm-hmm.
So in the private markets, a lot of work has to be done to sort of get a handle on whether or not you can manage the business. I think the biggest struggle that we face in South Africa is liquidity.
Yes.
So the private markets in our part of the world don't have the same level of liquidity as the rest of the world, let's say,
mm-hmm.
Where there's many credit providers, many, call it quasi-equity providers in the mayor's private credit.
Ah, there you're going with the fancy terms now.
Tom. Yeah.
Keep everyone on the same page.
So, okay, let me put it this way.
Versus vanilla structures, because we can go there.
So let me put it this way. There's liquidity in markets where people want fixed income risk with equity returns.
Aha.
Right. So there's that slice of funding that exists in more developed markets that doesn't necessarily exist at scale in our market.
Yes.
So capital losses, capital is in large volumes. There's a competition for returns, so people are willing to accept a certain degree of risk. So private equity in our minds or in our part of the country is very, I think, vanilla in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
You need to find a good business that you can drive quality returns and then at some point exit it. That's why you find there's a lot of private equity firms and investment holding companies, permanent capital vehicles who have a long lifetime in comparison to the fund that at some point you must exit. What that means for, let's say, the rand or our trade surplus is that there's a lot of businesses now that are going to enter that space and start competing.
Mm-hmm.
The logistics space, I think, is going to be very competitive. If you look at Pinduoduo in China, if you look at Amazon coming in now, there's going to be a lot of, there's going to be a lot of movement there. So what that does is it provides the domestic producer with a market that's broad globally, because now you can sell your product elsewhere in the world. So I think for the private markets, I think there's going to be some, well, in our view, there's some green shoots.
Yeah.
It's now becoming about the price entry price and how capital structure, how much do you borrow, and then operators, which we seem to have domestically, but once our companies start going offshore, we seem to lose our shirts.
Mm.
So I think that's one of the struggles we have to get our hands around as operators in our region.
I have so many more questions because you've just touched on a realm of the investment world that I think is so exciting. And of course, on the back of Rig 28, I'm looking to make sure that we get more capital within those spaces. So it does have an impact on individuals like you and I.
It does.
When it comes to our pension funds and the investments that we are able to access. But I guess to close off with, if we, you know, just do take a look at how that ecosystem and environment could shift as we move into 2025. What key highlights or, I guess, nuances are you anticipating there?
So I think there are some leading indicators. The one is the property sector, for example. If it starts doing well, if people are taking up and occupying space, that's an indication of a country or an economy going the right direction.
Does that matter in terms of the kind of property, retail, office space?
Yeah, generally does. Not necessarily. It depends on credit markets. So if you're residential, if you see that growth, then you know, okay, people can now afford mortgages. Commercial, you understand that companies are now taking up space. Industrial, it means there's a lot of manufacturing, export, import that's happening. So I think over time, when office space, industrial space, residential homes are being bought, it's a good indicator for the future of an economy. The second part, like you mentioned, Tsokosan, if you look at their numbers,
yes,
if you look at the occupancy rate has gone up, if you look at the revenue per room available, which is a major metric for them, has gone up. So you're starting to see business travel go up and people starting to take holiday. Part of it, I think, you could put into the two-pot system. So you can look at that and say people have some liquidity now. But broadly speaking, there's a lot of green shoots to look at in 2025.
100%. You've tickled my brain cells. There's so much more we can talk about and really deep dive into, because I think we often, especially as retail investors, because we don't necessarily often think of direct ways to access the private equity space. Mm. It's an area that we don't typically look at too often, but really critical in terms of driving growth, because without private equity, there's no growth of businesses. There's no employment that's actually made. Mm. And of course, even seeing how some of these businesses are then able to evolve and become publicly listed as well at some point following the exits from PE investors.
Yeah.
I could be your intern, you see. Tammy, we're doing this.
No,
thank you so much for your time this evening.
Thank
sir.
You for
really
having
appreciate
me.
It. That is Thamsanqa Netta, who is the CEO of Shiloh Capital, helping us unpack the markets and, of course, get a broader perspective on some company updates, company results, updates and numbers that have been released, and just learning more about the PE space, private equity. Next time you think of that, it's essentially just businesses that are not publicly owned and the kind of investments that we see within that particular realm. At some point, every business starts out with that level of funding and ultimately then does evolve, but plays a very, very critical role in ensuring the growth, development and advancement, not only of our economy, but the employment of our people too.
And if you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.